This is an ABC podcast. This podcast contains strong language, muscular adjectives, strapping punchlines, and swearing, suitable for mature audiences or immature audiences who are over 15. Hello, welcome to ABC Comedy Presents. I'm Kel Wilson, and I hope you like what I've done with the place. Please enjoy my show, Gifted Underachiever, recorded at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival back in 2019, when we were quite happy to be crammed into moist venues with hundreds of strangers just laughing away with our mouths open. Anyway, don't think about that. Get ready for some chat about the things that make us angry, the most mortifying moment of my life, dick pics, and how to torment your partner on a budget. I've been doing this for a wee while now, and I will never get used to having to say my own name like I'm someone else who's excited about me. It's so weird. I stand behind the curtain, I got my arms out, I'm like, Kel Wilson! I know her, she's not all great. Does anyone else have a job where they have to yell out their own name with enthusiasm? That's a genuine question. Who's that? What do you do? You sell health insurance. So how do you introduce yourself? Oh, okay, like, is that in person or on the phone, or... On the phone, yeah, I suppose we'd be like, hi, this is Jenny. In person, it'll be a little bit like, I can see, you're right there. That's the first answer I've had that's not a teacher. Because I've had teachers go, oh, I have to say that. And that makes sense because you're like, hello, class, I'm Mrs. Patterson. I get that. I had a guy the other night say, I have to do that. And I mean, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a comedian. I was like, fuck you, Reese Nicholson, fuck you. You should totally go and see his show. It's so brilliant. Oh, man, it's so great. He's on after me. Oh, I love him. I am very excited that you're here. Is everyone having a good festival? Excellent. So am I. It's like Christmas, but you have to work for all your presents for a comedian. It's sort of weird. But I'm very excited to be here because I've just been in Launceston, which was exciting, but it's lovely to be here. I don't know how I can underline that without sounding rude. So my favourite thing happened. I went and did some school visits while I was in Tasmania, not because I just love children, but because I've written a kids' book. And my favourite thing happened in Beaconsfield, 60 small children, like 4, 5 and 6. The teacher gets me to read a bit out of my book, and then she mentions that I'm from Melbourne and that we're going to take some questions. And so I go, okay, has anyone got any questions about the book? A little girl puts her hand up and goes, my mum's been to Melbourne. I was like, that is great. I live in Melbourne. Yes, that's really great. And a little boy puts his hand up and goes, my dad's been to Melbourne. And I was like, that is fascinating. Does anyone have any questions about the book? Little girl puts her hand up. My gran's been to Melbourne. I was like, that is great. It's a good city. I like, it's like Narnia. And I was like, does anybody have any questions about the book? Little girl puts her hand up and goes, yes. And she goes, my cousins live in Melbourne. And I was like, after about 15 minutes, like 45 children had told me that they had either been to Melbourne or they had met someone who had heard of Melbourne. It was just chaos. And so finally in the end I went, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you if anyone's been to Melbourne, know someone that's been to Melbourne, and after that I'm going to take questions about the book, okay? And I go, okay, who's been to Melbourne? Put up their hands. Who knows someone who's been to Melbourne? Yes! It was brilliant. And I went, okay, does anyone have any questions about the book? And a little boy puts his hand up and he goes, I'm going to Melbourne at Easter. It was like they got caught in this feedback loop that I just couldn't get them out of. It was genuinely my favourite gig of the tour. It was so great. The teacher was a bit embarrassed, but I was like, no, I really like odd things like that happen. I enjoy those little odd things. Like I've realised I get flustered with normal stuff, though. Like, I like to think of myself as a feminist, but I've realised I have some quite 50s housewife thoughts. Like, if we have friends over and the house is untidy, I feel that it reflects on me, but not my husband. That's some fancy bullshit, isn't it? So now I've started saying, I'm so sorry about the mess. We're just in the middle of always living like this. That's helped me out a lot. It's brilliant. I do get flustered. I get flustered when people recognise me because I'm just at that level of recognition for most people that they feel they know me from somewhere and think we've been to primary school together. And then do I know you? And it's like, I don't know. I am literally not you. Like, I'm not you, so I don't know whether you know. Like, I don't know. I can't answer that question. Or people will go, are you famous? To which I have to go, well, no, not if you have to ask. But I was at the supermarket the other day, and a man recognised me on purpose, and I knew that he had genuinely recognised me because I was putting my groceries in the boot, and he screams to a halt in his ute, jumps out, just leaves it in the middle of the car park and goes, "You! I know you! I love you!" And then he goes, "Give me a cuddle." And I did not wish to. I don't know whether this makes me a weirdo, but I don't like hugging complete strangers. Like, it's just not my thing. Like, if we meet after the show and we bond over something lovely or terrible or we have a photo, yeah, sure, bring it in. Or if you're one of my friends, I'll be all up on your shit like a professional koala. But being commanded to cuddle a complete stranger, not my bag. Don't like it, don't like it. Also, cuddle, too intimate a word. Like, to me, you only cuddle someone you've had sex with or that you've made. That man did not fit into either of those categories, as far as I could remember. And so I went, "Oh no, you're right, mate." And he goes, "No, give me a cuddle." And I don't want to sound judgmental, but he was a bit methy. Like, he had that kind of wiry fitness that only comes from vibrating a lot. And so at that point, I was like, it's just going to be safer for me if I cuddle him, right? What a turn of events. Just going to be safer if I cuddle him. So we move together and we start the embrace. And it goes on for quite a long time, like to the point where I'm actually thinking, oh, I think I belong to him now. Like, and it was a warm day and he was just enough taller that his armpit just fitted on my shoulder like a sort of little sweat falcon. Like, it was just... And eventually we broke apart and he goes off and it had made his day and it fucked mine. Because I just don't think people should be commanded to hug other people. Like, it happens to little kids all the time. I was around at a friend's place recently, she had a two-year-old. At the end of the visit, my friend goes, "Go and give Auntie Cal a hug." And I was like, "No, don't." Like, for a start, I am not her auntie, unless my brother has some interesting news for me and his wife. To her, I'm just some old random that her mum has let in the house. Like, to her, I look like I'm 90 and I smell of damp. Because when you're little, people are terrifying. Like, adults are terrifying. And you have no concept of what their age is. Like, to little kids, aging goes like this. 7, 8, 9, old. That's what it is, right? I remember visiting my Aunt Hildreth when I was a kid, and I found her terrifying. Like, she was all whiskery. And, I was convinced she was old enough to have been at the opening day sale at the pyramids. Like, looking back, she was probably 35. Who knows? That's when I started to get whiskers. So, anyway, don't make a small child hug someone they don't want to. Like, let them have bodily autonomy. Let them decide who they want to hug. And also, how do you know that I want to touch it? Like, I've owned a toddler and they are sticky. Like, you look at a small child and you go, "That's cute." And I go, "Ugh, residue." Like, just too... Like, until it's 4, a child is basically sentient blue tack. Like, if you pick up a child and just kind of roll it up and down your body, it acts as a lint roller. It's amazing. My point stands, though. Don't make your kids touch anyone they don't want to, because otherwise they'll just end up as a middle-aged woman hugging a junkie in a car park. Yesterday, I was in the town hall and a guy goes, "Cal, I really like what you do. May I shake your hand?" And it was so lovely, I could have hugged him. It's just beautiful, it's beautiful. I realised I've just called myself a middle-aged woman moments ago. I know that's not a surprise to you because you're looking at me, but it's still a shock to me. I do know that I'm middle-aged. Several things are telling me. One, I fit into the 45 to 54 box now when I fill in an online form. And I own bifocals and I wear a statement necklace. And that statement is, please don't look at my neck. Pretty much that is. I also know that I'm getting older because bits of me have started to fall apart. Like, I don't mean like, oh, prolapse, but I mean, although I do always wear tights. This is what's happened to me, right? I thought I had more time before this happened. My eyes have just started to spontaneously water for no reason. Like, they're just several points of the day, I'm just streaming tears. Like, has that happened to anyone else yet? Oh, it's awful, isn't it? I'm just sitting there reading the paper the other morning. My husband looks at me and goes, "What's wrong with you?" I had to pretend I was sad about something. He goes, "What's up?" And I was like, "Oh, I was just thinking about Bambi's mother. You know, she was such an important part of that story, but she never got her own first name. Like, you know, she didn't have an identity. She was just always Bambi's mother. Like, they didn't even call her Mrs. Venison or anything." I also know that I'm getting older because I'm simultaneously giving less of a shit and getting furious over stuff that doesn't matter. I don't know if that's happening to anyone else, but oh my God, like just little things will just, I'll just like turn into a ball of fire. Like, do not stop at the bottom of an escalator to decide what you're going to do. Get the fuck out of the way. Oh my God, shorts should not be shorter than their own pockets. Fucking hell. Oh my God. Oh my God. If I ask you where you want to go for dinner, don't go, I don't know. You choose. You fucking choose. You choose. Oh my God. Oh man, I've started to, I don't know whether you can tell, but inside thoughts have started to play outside. Oh, my inside thoughts. They're just outside in the garden. They've opened the gate. They've gone out onto the street. They're telling people things. It's terrible. I just inside stuff is coming out. Like I walked out into the middle of a Hare Krishna parade the other day, and out loud I went, oh, well, this is fucked. Like, they are literally not hurting a fly. Like, I'm pretty sure that's one of their things. Like, they don't, and I'm just like, go and bother God somewhere else. Like just terrible. I like to think that I'm a nice person, but sometimes, oh, I'm a mole. Like, I just... Like, I've always loved to compliment people on what they're wearing. Like, I love doing it. Like, I like to make someone's day while I'm going, oh, you've got great shoes, and I like yours. But then now I've started to go, great shoes, nice shoes, lift your game. Like, that's terrible. That's terrible. Not you, sir. Your shoes are very respectable. That was a neutral describing word, wasn't it? Respectable could have meant anything. Lift your game. No. You look lovely. I've just started to say stuff out loud because I just don't give a shit anymore. I was going to say, I don't shit anymore. That's another thing of getting older. Ah, Metamucil. It's like mucil, but really meta. I don't know. I've never had it. Is it delicious? What is it? Is it porridge? I don't know. See, inside thoughts, just outside having a run. Just going outside. I just say stuff out loud now. The same thing has happened to my mother. Like, she's older than me, clearly. Otherwise, I should have opened with that. My name's Cal. I'm the same age as my mum. So anyway, my mum is the most gorgeous, beautiful, kind, warm, mummiest mum. Like, she's the loveliest woman. But she has just started to openly heckle my father. And oh my God, I love it. It is so great. They've been married for 55 years, and in that time he has done quite a lot of talking over her. And now she is just commentating the way she feels. And it is so great. So we were there at Christmas time, and my dad, Graham, is seated at the end of the table. He is finishing his dinner. All of the other Wilsons have finished their dinner because Graham is a notoriously slow eater. And Barbara, my mother, she's called Barbara because all women of her age are. I'm standing at the bench with Barbara looking at Graham, and this is what my mum is saying. She's just looking at him going, ugh, look at him. Ugh, he's like a snail with arms. Oh, God, how long can it take one man to eat a potato salad? For fuck's sake. She didn't say for fuck's sake because she's 80, but she meant it. That's what she meant. I love my mum. She's so great. She's always got her words mixed up, though. Like, she rang me once and she goes, oh, Cal, I had something to tell you, but it's completely blown my mind. I was like, oh, that sounds cosmic, Barbie. I wonder what it was. And then when we were there, we're back in Christchurch over Christmas, she's reading a magazine and she's looking puzzled. And I'm just watching her look puzzled. And then she goes, what's a miniseries? Wait, what? And she goes, what's miniseries? I've literally never seen this word before. And I go over and have a look and I go, oh, it's miniseries. But now, miniseries has become a family word. And it means you're not quite depressed, but you're definitely sad about something. So you'd use it in a sentence like this. Barbara took Graham's plate too soon, and now he's got the miniseries. So my mum was a primary school teacher, and she was a brilliant teacher, and she had this really great group of primary school teacher friends. All of these women, there was about eight of them, and they used to go out once a month for a girls' lunch, just the women. So there were six Barbaras. And a Bev and a Rosie, who were just, outliers. So they used to go out for this girls' lunch once a month to talk teaching and whatever else, and there was no husbands, no partners, just the girls. Girls out for lunch, right? And this happened all through my childhood, and it wasn't until I was an adult that it occurred to me to ask my mother, Mum, are Bev and Rosie a couple? And my mum was like, oh, no, I don't think so. And I was like, well, they own a house together. And she was like, oh, yes, but teachers' salaries are so low, it was just practical for them to buy a house together. And I was like, okay, but they go on holiday together. Well, they enjoy each other's company. I was like, I think they do, Mum. And I went, they've got a wee dog together and they sleep in the same room. And she was like, oh, well, I'd better go and ring Barbara. So she goes off, she rings one of the other Barbaras, and she comes back and she is livid. Because it turns out that Bev and Rosie are together, and the reason she's so furious is that means they've brought a partner to every single one of those girls' lunches. See, only reason she was upset. She was like, I wasn't allowed to bring Graham. And I was like, well, to be fair, he'd still be there at breakfast the next day. So probably just as well. But I've started to take after my mother. I've started to say stuff out loud. The thing that I find myself muttering most often is, do your job. Just find myself saying it to everybody, to anyone. I can say it to a bird or a dog. I just, do your job. Just do your fucking job. Like I was at one of those little boutique supermarkets the other day, and, you know, it's one of those ones where everything's packaged in cardboard and it tastes worse, but it was made in Byron, so it's really expensive. And so I go in and find two packets of corn chips, which are on sale, so they're only mildly expensive. I take them up to the counter. The woman puts them through. They ring up at full price. And I go, oh, they were on sale. And this is what she said. Oh, I've put them through now. I was like, yeah, they haven't gone through customs. It's not like they've left the country. Like, this isn't international departures. Like, they're right there. Like, I was like, I can still touch them. And I look at her and go, but they were on sale. And she goes, I'd have to ring for the manager. And I was like, you would. Like, you would. And she's right there. Like, she hasn't gone through departures either. I could also touch her. And then she goes to me, this is what she actually said. She went, I suppose I should do my job. Yes! Do your fucking job. Just do your job. Do you? And then, of course, because she'd fixed her mistake, I was like overly effusive. I'm like, oh, thank you for being barely adequate at your job. Like, just like, oh, you did a marvellous job of fixing your fuck up. Like, oh my God. I've quite a well of supermarket based rage in me, I've worked out. The other thing that really gets me is when you're in the supermarket and you're behind a person and they're always in front of you, it's the people who forget they have to pay. Do you know the ones? So they're in front of you, they put their groceries up on the counter, and then they go offline. And they're just standing there like, boop, just like that. And then the checkout operator go, that's $60.70. And they go, better get my wallet out. Get your fucking wallet out. Oh my God, have it out, be ready. Oh my God. It happens every time. It's not like it's a surprise. Like, oh my God. It's not like once out of every 10 times you get it for free. Or like if you just look confident enough, the checkout operator will back down and go, oh no, she must not have to pay, off you go. Like, fucking hell, get your fucking wallet out. My God, there's no excuse for it, unless it's your first day in Australia and you've never used a monetary system before. In which case, I'll give you a hand. Welcome to Australia. There's room for everyone here, despite what the news is saying. So, that is the only... Or, unless you are a young parent and your toddler has fallen into the confectionery and you've dragged them out and they're just covered in Mars bars, just stuck to their little bodies, and they've got, like, toilet rolls stuck to their back, and they're sort of turning into, like, a hermit crab shell of growth. Like, that they are the only two times that you are excused for not having your fucking wallet out. Oh, my God. I used to work in a supermarket. I think that's probably why I'm so angry. It wasn't the worst job I've ever had. The first job I had, I worked part-time while I was at high school. I worked at a library shelving books, like putting books on the shelf, not whoop. You only make that mistake once. So paper cuts are terrible. So I worked at a library for 2 hours a week, and my pay was $1.24 an hour. And by the end of the year, I'd saved up enough to buy a pair of blue corduroy stirrup pants. And in hindsight, I wish they'd paid me less. So I used to work at a supermarket, right? And what I discovered is that people wish you to be efficient and friendly, but they don't want you to have a personality. Like, they're not interested in anything out of the ordinary. They want to hear about flybys and fuck all else, right? And I discovered that people don't want you to have a personality when a woman came through one day and she had squashed her bread. And so she's patting her bread back into shape quite vigorously like that. And so I just lean over and go, bad bread. Naughty bread. And she just looks at me and goes, I'll use the other aisle. But even when I knew people that were coming through my checkout, I used to get fucked up with, like the, my mum had this lovely principal called Mr. Mason, and I'd known him since I was a kid, and he had an old beagle called Sam that he loved. And so Mr. Mason comes through my checkout and I go, "Hello, Mr. Mason, how's Sam?" And he goes, "Dead." And I go, "Oh no, when?" And he goes, "Today." Like he was literally on his way home from the vet, having had the dog put down. And I don't know whether you can work this out by yourselves, but that was the end of that conversation. Like there was no coming back from "dead today." Like there's no coming back from that. Like I learned that lesson so well that to this day, if someone asks after my husband and I can't be fucked having a conversation, I do the same thing. "How's Chris?" "Dead." I don't do that. Oh, God. No, that would feel too much like tempting fate. And also, I feel that it will be true one day, like because I think he is probably going to die first because I am so annoying and you just want to have some peace and quiet. Like, I'm pretty sure he'll be like, "Oh, just out of self-defense, like, just gone." He's lovely, my husband. He's much more relaxed than I am. He's a very kind person. He's very open-hearted. He's a great dad. He has all of these amazing qualities, but the one that I describe him as most often is patient. Because he's married to me. And the fact that he's still married to me means that he is a patient man. He also used to be a primary school teacher, which is probably why we get on so well, because he's used to dealing with short, irrational people with terrible handwriting. So we get on very well. But he's we've been together for 15 years, and what I love is I'm still finding out new stuff about him. Like, I have only just figured out that he does not need to debrief. He does not need to talk about an experience after having that experience. To him, he's had the experience, it is done. For me, having the experience is half the experience. Like, what I mean is, like, if we go to a party, he doesn't want to talk about the party on the way home from the party. That's the best part of the party. That is the best part of the party when you're in the car on the way home and you're going, "Oh my God, I can't believe they've called their daughter Shavanthony." Like, ah. Oh. I have actually met a Shavanthony, right? These are my three favourite women's names that I have met in real life. Shavanthony, Brucina, and Daryline. What a pack of wankers those parents were. Why not just call all three of them "We Wanted a Boy"? Anyway, so Chris does not feel the need to debrief. It's like after he's had an experience, he just reverts back to factory settings. It's just like, "Oh, tomorrow's a new day, let's look at that." Like he doesn't, like if we go to a movie, he does not need to talk about the movie after the movie. Oh, someone made a noise like, "Oh, you've said he's nice, but how can he be?" This is the worst one for me, right? Because after a movie, I love to do the whole, "Oh, didn't you love that scene where the clouds kind of dissolved and it was like their relationship, they were parting ways," and he's like, "I just saw some people doing a thing." Like he doesn't. So the way I've combated him not wanting to talk about the movie after the movie is I talk to him about the movie during the movie. Which is why he doesn't take me to see films anymore and we have to watch them at home. I have this thing that I love to do to him, especially if we are out in a group of people, especially if they have not met him before. I have this little conversational time bomb that I like to throw out. And it's a very dull fact about Chris. Like when I tell you, you'll be like, "What a boring fact." But even though it's really dull, it irrevocably changes the conversation. So this is the fact that I throw out. And he knows I'll do it to him. He waits for it because I love it so much, right? So just in the middle of a conversation, I'll go, "Hey, did you guys know that Chris doesn't like fruit?" Oh, that sounds quite dull, doesn't it? But what happens is every single person names a different fruit and he says no. Oh, it is the joy of my life. It is so great. It is so great. Actually, let's try it now. I'll be Chris. You just name fruit at me and I'll be Chris. Okay, just yell some fruit out. No. 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 Oh, no! No! So good. So after about 15 minutes, the conversation will move on away from the fruit, and then we'll be back into that. And didn't you love that scene where the clouds were kind of dissolving? And it was like, and then someone will go, "Dragon fruit!" And he'll go, "No!" Oh, so good. So good. We were having a couple of issues actually recently, and we managed to sort it out. Like sometimes I will say something to Chris, which he believes doesn't require a response, but I disagree. I don't know if any of you have conversations like this where you thought it was a conversation, but it turns out it's just a monologue, and for your own benefit, because don't you love the sound of your own voice? So So, what he's done for me is he's workshopped a noise that he makes to let me know that he has heard what I've said, but he does not feel the need to discuss. But he wants me to know that he was listening enough to go, oh, that's fucked, I don't care. So he just makes it. This is the noise that he makes to let me know he has heard, no further discussion. This is the noise. It's a good one, isn't it? It sounds like you've surprised an owl in a cupboard. That's all right. It has to be completely unmistakable though, so I don't mistake it for another noise. So this is how we would use it in a conversation. I'll say something like, oh my god, I finally found the cats, they'd shut themselves in the sock drawer. Or, oh man, that was lucky, I just got the washing in before the rain started. So it's a very kind thing. I don't let them come to the previews of comedy festival shows though, because the last thing I want to hear if I've tried out a joke that doesn't work is, He's great. He's a lot more laid back than I am. Like, he's mostly horizontal, like the whole time, just so relaxed. Whereas I get really uptight about stupid stuff. Like at the moment, I'm furious with Instagram. Has anyone got Instagram? Show of hands. Has Instagram? Everyone else knows what Instagram is, don't they? Yeah, great. In Launceston, I said, who's got Instagram? Two people put their hands up. And when I went, does anyone know what Instagram is? One of them took it down. I don't know what they thought Instagram was. Like, oh, isn't that like Deliveroo for grandmas? Like, I don't know. So the way I tried to describe Instagram to Launceston, and I said it's like Tinder, but for breakfast. Which is a bullshit description. That is not what it is at all. But I have to say I'm pretty fascinated by Tinder as well, because I didn't have Tinder when I was out and about in my 20s. Like, it didn't exist. And so now, when I'm with my younger friends who are on Tinder, I like to help. Like, I like to get involved. I've never quite established which way you're supposed to swipe. So, they've been on some interesting dates. What I'm fascinated by is the number of dick pics they receive. Like, just so many dick. Oh, this is not like I've never had a dick pic. This is not a subtle request to send me dick pics. Like, I'm quite happy with the real one that I've got at home. But I'm just fascinated by the whole dick pic phenomenon. Like, so many dick pics. Like if you genuinely believe that the most attractive part of your body is your cock, you need to work on your self-esteem. Like, there are so many body parts. I would take over a cock, like an elbow. I'd take an elbow, obviously in a photo. I mean, I don't mean in person. I'm not like, well, I'd rather have a... look, we've been together a long time. So it all started with shelving those books. So I'm just fascinated by the whole dick pic thing. Like if you had wanted to send a dick pic when I was in my 20s, the first thing you would have to do would be to borrow the family camera. Like, you'd go and ask your mum, she'd be like, oh, I think Dad's put it in the shed. And then when you'd finally got it, you'd have to go outside to take the photo because flashes weren't that reliable. So you'd take a photo of your junk and then you'd have to finish the rest of the roll. Then once you'd finally done 24, you'd put it in the film canister, take it down to the chemist. He'd go, do you want 1 hour processing? You'd be like, are you crazy? It's so expensive. 7 days will be fine. Then you go back in a week, this chemist would slide the photos back across the counter to you, probably say something like, I've got some cream for that if you're interested. And then you would have to go home and sort through the packet, find your dick pic, and then give it to the person in person. Like, you would have to be there while they looked at your dick pic. Just standing there, you're like, oh, for me, oh. What, was it taken from far away? I don't... And then what happens if you forget you've taken a dick pic by the time you've finished the roll? And then you're just going through your holiday snaps with your family. You're like, oh, this is us in the Ardèche. That's us at the Eiffel Tower. That is a beige lighthouse. Wasn't very interesting. No, you're right. It was very overgrown. Dick pic, and dick pic's quite satisfying to say too, isn't it? Dick pic, quite satisfying. Like, we just didn't swap pictures of our bits to each other when I was in my 20s. You know, like, the closest you might come to it is you'd be walking along the street and a guy would yell out his car window, show us your tits! And you'd be like, the technology's not available yet. But surely there must be misunderstandings with dick pics. Like, I can imagine a conversation being like, no, I said I wanted a picnic, not a dick pic. But then I started enjoying saying picnic dick pic too much. And I started singing, it's a dick pic, picnic, show to go my bone, this old man should just stay home. And then I got stuck going, would you prefer to have a dick pic picnic or a picnic dick pic? Like, which would be better? And I think it would be a picnic dick pic, because then that's just one guy doing it outside, but a dick pic picnic, everyone's doing it, I think. So anyway, I hate Instagram. I love Instagram. This is what I'm on Instagram for. I follow cakes, cats, and drag queens. That's who I follow, because I just like to see happy, joyful, delicious, tasty things and cakes. What I do, though, is if you follow me, I will have a look at you. I'll go, oh, who is this person that's followed me? And if you have a motivational quote as your Instagram bio, you can get fucked. Oh, man, fuck off with your motivational quotes. I mean, they are motivational. They do motivate me to want to block you. Like, it's this... Like, there was one the other day that was like, if you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, it's yours. If it doesn't, it never was. Really what that should be is, if you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, you haven't given it clear enough directions. But the ones I really hate, the motivational quotes that I really hate are the ones that you can also buy in Kmart to put on your kitchen wall. You know, the ones that are like wooden letters and it's like three words. This woman followed me the other day and hers was, live, love, life. And I was like, two of those things are the same. Live and life, they're the same. It's the same. Live and life, that is the same concept. Live and life. Like, it's three words long. Couldn't you fucking proofread it? Like, oh my God. And then I was trying to work out how she could possibly justify having live, love, life. And Chris workshopped it with me. And I was like, how could you justify having those three words? Like, oh, well, you know, they're my three favourite things. I really like to live. I really like to love, but most of all, I like to life. Like, whenever you see me, I'm lifing it up. Just life, 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 life! I don't know, maybe she's in prison for life. But what really made me furious was she listed her occupation as manufacturer of vegan pet food. I was like, how is that a thing? Like, so when do you get to have time to do that? You're too busy at Flinders Street Station. But it's like... I was like, what is the point of vegan pet food? Like, I can't imagine a dog has ever said, I would like a soy patty, please. Or something shaped like a sausage that is ultimately disappointing. I mean, who looks at their cat and goes, I know what my carnivore needs, plants. Like I admire vegans for their commitment to their ideology, right? I think they're right. We need to treat animals better. We need to be more ethical in our treatment of animals. We should be eating less meat. We should be looking after our planet more. But also, that's a very human concern, and animals don't give a shit. You know, like if I said to my cat, lunch had a family, it would be like, yeah, the cousins were delicious. Like, it just would not give a shit. I used to have an old cat called Spook, and he would leave me the hearts of sparrows under my bed. Like, I'd come home and there'd be like three little hearts just under the bed, and I was never sure whether it was a gift or a tiny threat. Whereas if he'd been just a little bit bigger, he would have gone full godfather and I just found a horse under the bed or something. I've also realised that I get quite judgy about people's pets as well. Like, I think everyone should have a pet because I love animals. But I don't quite know what to do if you have an exotic pet. Does anyone have an unusual pet? You're like, not anymore. I'm going to pretend it's a dog. I some exotic pets are amazing. Like, a guy in Adelaide said he had a wedge-tailed eagle. I was like, how do you get one of those? And he goes, well, a truck hit it and it couldn't fly. And I was like, what do you call a wedge-tailed eagle? And he goes, my wife insisted on calling it Egbert. And I was like, that's pretty good. And he goes, nah, I wanted to call it Wedginald. I had to have a wee sit down after that. I like that so much. But like, if you've got a snake, I don't get why you'd have a snake as a pet. It's like, oh, I've got a fatal scarf. Like, what can you do? Like, oh no, we love him. We can use him as a draft stopper and he'll kill the children. Like, it's just like, what? I don't get it. Lizards, I'm also not sure on lizards. Like, lizards have the premium number of legs for a pet. I think four is the optimum number of legs on a pet. If you've got a bird, I'll accept two. But if you have a four-legged bird, you've got a griffin, so fuck me, that's amazing. And also, I'm not trying to body shame any cats that are missing a leg, or, you know, like, if you've got a dog on wheels, that's also adorable, who wouldn't fucking want one of those? But I just think four legs is a good number for a pet. But lizards, not much personality, and they're just kind of spiky and knobbly. Like, what is your criteria for a pet? I just want something to love that I can also grate a potato on. Right, for me, the ideal pet should be big enough to cuddle, but small enough that it can't run away if you haven't finished cuddling it. Although now that I've said that out loud, I suspect my cats probably view me like a methy man in a car park. Pirate and Barnacle are probably home right now, and Pirate's going, oh my God, she hugged me for 4 hours this afternoon. I mean, it made her day, but it fucked mine. The secret belief that when our cats are out of view, they go out the back and they unzip their furry hoods and take their furry suits off, and they're just tiny actors doing a corporate mingle. I reckon Pirate and Barnacle are out the back having a cigarette break going, oh, okay, okay, we've got 20 more minutes to do this hour, so I tell you what, we'll finish that, and then I'll go in and sit on a knee to distract it, and you piss on the curtains, okay? Right, all right. Zip. Meow! I don't know if that happens at your house, but it happens at mine. And what I've worked out is that I'm a total cat lady. Like, I've got a husband and son purely as camouflage. I love a cat. What I've discovered over the years is that it's perfectly socially acceptable to say that you don't like cats, but it's not socially acceptable to say that you don't like dogs. Like, if I said, I hate cats, there'd always be someone going, oh, yeah, cats are assholes. But if I said, I hate dogs, everyone would be like, well, there's an asshole here, and it's not the dog. And the thing is, I don't hate dogs. I just find them a bit much in person. Like, I love them as a concept, but, like, in person, they're a little bit too extra, right? I think it was because I was bitten as a kid. Not by a dog, but it really put me off teeth. I was actually bitten by a dog. I was bitten by Sandy, the next door neighbour's Labrador, because the kids came across one day when I was about four, and they went, do you want to see Sandy's new trick? And I said, yes. And they went, okay, you start running. And I couldn't tell, like you seem to have worked out, that Sandy's trick was if you run, she bites you on the ass. And what I didn't realise was that screaming and crying was actually Sandy for, I'm enjoying this, let's keep going. And so she chased me right around the block, just biting me on the ass like a malevolent hole punch. And to this day, I'm a little bit wary of dogs, and when I drink water, it comes out my ass like a showerhead. I love dogs on video. Like, my favourite way to interact with a dog is on video. Like, if I could FaceTime a poodle, I'd be in heaven, right? But I love watching those dog videos on YouTube of dogs greeting their owners who have been away for a long time. Have you seen them? It's usually like soldiers coming back from deployment, and like the dog hasn't seen them for 18 months, and then you see the dog see the owner, and it's like it's just suddenly feeling everything with everything. You know, like it's just like, it's never driven a dog before. Like, it's just all like, oh, fuck, oh, it's you, what does this do? Oh, tongue! Like, it's just, oh man, I love that so much. I love that so much. Because I love how dogs feel stuff. Like, this is like when a dog loves you, you can tell, right? This is how my cat shows that it loves and trusts me. It slowly closes its eyes and blinks a few times. That is genuinely cat for, I trust you. Because what it's doing is it's going, I trust you enough, I'm closing my eyes in front of you, you could stab me in the throat, but I know you won't. Right, that's what it is. So I was like, ugh. I mean, it doesn't really compare, does it? But yeah, at least it doesn't bite me on the ass. It has bit me on the ass. Cats are assholes. So, because I'm such a cat lady, oh man, I get stuck into those videos though. If they took all of the animal videos off YouTube, the internet would be 7 minutes long. It would just be porn and how to fold a fitted sheet. That's all that would be there. But because I'm such a cat lady, I've realised that I've never really interacted properly with a dog, and I've got to the age of 48 without knowing how to pat a dog properly. Like, I genuinely don't know how to pat a dog properly. Like, I know how you pat a cat, you just follow the grain. You keep doing that until it's 30 seconds too late. Was with a dog, I'm not sure how you pat it. Like, if you try and pat it like a cat, you just end up with that kind of like dog grime on your hand. They're like the toddlers of the animal kingdom. It's just residue. But I don't know how hard you're supposed to pat it for the like pat to travel through the fur and reach the dog. Like, I don't know if it's getting the pat signal. Like, do you have to beat it like a carpet? Do you crank its tail? I really genuinely don't know what to do. And a guy in the audience the other night go, oh, for fuck's sake, you just do this. And then he patted his friend. Just sitting there in the front row, giving his friend's head a really good scruffle. And I was like, oh, I can see what you mean. And he's like, yeah, you just get stuck in like that. And I was like, that is so great. Can I have a go? And the guy doing the patting went, yeah, sure, go for your life. So I lean over, I'm patting the guy in the front row, and he had like good sort of terrier hair, and I'm like really scruffling it up. And I was like, I've got it. Like, it was like an Eliza Doolittle moment. I was like, that's fucking amazing. And I genuinely felt like I'd made a new life skill, like I'd worked out something that I could now do. And then after the show, the guy who I'd patted came up and went, oh, hi, I just thought I should introduce myself to you now that you've patted me. And I was like, I don't need to know your name to know that you're a good boy. So great. I think it's really important for kids to have pets when they're growing up. Like, I think pets are really great for teaching you empathy and teaching you responsibility for another living creature. And I think they're also often a really safe way to teach kids about death. Like, obviously, only if that happens organically. I'm not suggesting, like, I've smothered Fluffy. How do you feel? So when my son was about 4 and a half, our old cat died, and I was away in Auckland. It's just how it happened. I'm not trying to establish an alibi. So I was in Auckland for work, and my husband, who does not like to debrief, had to ring up, get me on FaceTime, and then break the news over FaceTime. And I was really genuinely upset because I'd had the cat for longer than I'd had the husband. And he did a beautiful job of breaking the news to me. He did a far better job of telling me than the courier did who told him. So courier comes to the door, Chris signs for his parcel, and then the courier goes, "Oh, do you have an old black cat?" And Chris goes, "Yep." And he goes, "Not anymore, mate." He hadn't run the cat over. Spook had just gone outside and lain down on the grass in the sun and just died. And I don't know whether this is weird to anyone else, but this is what we did. Chris took the cat to the vet, and the vet kept the cat for me until I could get home to say goodbye to him. And so he kept him in the fridge at the vet. Not the staff kitchen fridge. It wasn't like, you know, yogurt, bananas, Spook. It wasn't like that. Oh, does anyone want this cat? So I went and saw the cat, and this is what, I love our vet so much, he's so kind. When I went to see Spook, he got him all wrapped up in a towel, so he looked really cosy, and then he put Spook down on the bench, and as he's talking to me about what he thinks has happened, he's just like rubbing his ears and stroking his head as if he was still alive, and I was like, that is so beautiful, or he is really unobservant. I don't know, he's not eating his Bickies, Cal, but we'll get him right for you. So this is not part of the show, but I keep giving our vet feral kittens. It's so hard to know what to buy for a vet. So we have a bit of a feral cat problem where I live, and so I've given them 2 litters of feral kittens, and they make them well, they give them vaccinations, then they rehome them. And I said the last lot I caught 4 kittens. This is how I also know I'm getting more judgmental. I was referring to them as 4 feral kittens and their teenage mum. That's what I was saying. Because the cat was only about a year old. And so I managed to catch the kittens and the mum in the lawnmower catcher. Not off the lawnmower. Lawnmower was over there. I literally scooped them into the scoop like this. I take them to the vet. The vet's like, yeah, we can look after them. They're really cute little kittens. And my favourite thing happened a couple of days later. The vet nurse emailed me and went, "Hi, Cal, kittens are doing great. Just wanted to let you know that the mum is so friendly and affectionate and we all adore her so much, we've called her Kitty Flanagan." Oh, that is brilliant. And then she goes, "We carried on the comedy theme with the kittens' names, so we've got Magda, Ursula, Sam Pang, and Cal." And I was like, yes, yes! Made it onto a kitten. I'm like, at last I've got merch. So when Spooky died, we made sure that we told my son the truth, even though he was only about 4 and a half. We told him the truth, because I didn't want to do that thing of like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Spooky's gone to live on the farm. He's gone to live on the farm." Did anyone, just show of hands, did anyone get told that their pet had gone to live on a farm? What did you have? A dog. And did you believe that he'd gone to the farm? Completely. When did you work it out? Much later. Not now, though, eh? Not right now. Yep, cool. I'm only saying that because that happened in Launceston. Like, I was talking to like someone seated where you were, and then suddenly there was a huge kerfuffle over the other side, and the guy's just laughing hysterically. And I mean, what's wrong? And he goes, "I'm in my mid-30s, and I've only just figured it out." Oh. And then after the show, he sent me a screenshot of the text conversation he had with his mother where she just apologised for each animal. So great. Oh, it was so great. I had a woman in the audience in Adelaide who said that she'd run over the family cat, and so she told the kids that it had gone to look for a boyfriend. I was like, so not only did you kill it, you slut-shamed it as well. My favourite answer that I've had so far, I did an all-ages gig and I had 2 brothers in the front row. They were 9 and 13. And the 9-year-old puts his hand up and he goes, "Our dad told us our turtle had gone to Fiji." And I look at the dad and the dad just slides out of his chair and is trying to not make eye contact. I'm like, "No, tell me what happened, Dad." And so the dad tells me what happened. And so the kids have been overseas for 4 months with their mum. They're having a family, like a relatives reunion kind of thing. They'd been away for 4 months. It was the night before they were due to come home. And Dad suddenly realises he hasn't cleaned the turtle out. And I was like, "Oh no, so you went to the tank and the turtle had been dead for ages." And he goes, "No, the turtle was fine at this point." And I was like, "What did you do?" And he goes, "I cleaned the tank out, I put the turtle back in the fresh water in the tank, and then I remembered you're supposed to put special salts in the water. But I didn't have any, So I just used table salt. And when he came down in the morning, the turtle had gone white and hard and was no longer with us. And I was like, what did you do? And he goes, I drove around for hours trying to find another one of those little fuckers. He said, the only one I could find was too small. And I was like, yeah, you couldn't really like say, oh, yes, he's been ill. Like, how would you? And so it was this brilliant conversation. After the show, the nine-year-old comes and finds me and he goes, hello, Cal, I'm from the turtle family. I was like, I know who you are, mate, because you made my night. And he goes, I just thought you would like to know that we knew the turtle had died, but not that Dad had killed it. I was like, oh, man, what a way to find out in front of hundreds of strangers. Like, you know, the next couple of days, we're going, turtle murderer, turtle murderer. Always used to wonder, though, what did farmers' kids get told? Oh, sorry, Dale. Rusty's gone to work in the city as a barista. I had a woman who grew up on the farm the other day and she said that her parents told her that they'd got lost down the back paddock. I mean, how was that? And she goes, well, I got lost down the back paddock one night and I was shitting myself. My son's 9 now, he's nearly 10. He's such a little dude. I sometimes think that he was born at the age of 45. Because, like, in December, I said, what would you like for Christmas? And he goes, I would like an experience. I was like, what 9-year-old boy says that? So I went, how about we don't give you any presents? That would be an experience. I didn't say that. I actually got him an African wildcat experience at Werribee Zoo, which he loved, but the zookeepers were furious and I had to give the bolt cutters back. So I'm sure they've found most of them. It's fine. I left it quite late to have my son. So I'm the last one of my friendship circle to have had a child, and so all of my friends' kids are in their mid-teens. And when we get together now, we talk about the kids' lives because they're having them and we're not. So I caught up with one of my mates in Adelaide and we were chatting about what everyone was up to. And we were talking about our other friend's daughter who's 13 and she's just got her first girlfriend. And I was saying how great it is that she's able to be completely open about the fact she's got a girlfriend and her parents are really supportive and they love the girlfriend and it's all very sweet and innocent. And I was going, that is so lovely and just what a beautiful turn of events. And my mate goes, oh, yeah, but she's calling herself pansexual. And I was like, yeah, what's wrong with that? So as I understand, pansexual means that you're open to loving anyone no matter what package they come in, right? And I was like, well, what's the problem with that? And he goes, oh, kids are just being asked to make too many choices these days. You know, like there's all this non-binary and transgender and cisgender. And it was just easier when it was just boys and girls. And I was like, no, it was just easier for you. Like you knew you were a boy and I knew I was a girl and that was fine for us. But what about all of our friends that we missed out on really knowing because they didn't know it was safe to be themselves? And he's like, oh, it's just so many words to learn. There's so many, all these words, new words. And I was like, dude, don't get upset about having to widen your vocabulary. Like we learn new words for stuff all the time. Like look at technology. We are always learning new words. Like technology, 10 years ago, if I'd said to you that something was streaming across multiple platforms, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like... And then you try and work it out by breaking it down word by word. You'd be going, okay, platforms, that's women's shoes. Okay, so it's women's shoes, platforms, multiple platforms, lots of women's shoes. Okay, so probably a shoe shop scenario. Okay, so something's happening in a shoe shop. Streaming across lots of women's shoes. Okay, so there's been a flood in a shoe shop. And getting angry because you have to learn new ways of using words. It's like, that's like going, oh, well, I liked it best when all that was in the cloud was rain. Like, just... Move on, dude. Like, let people be who they are. And it went on for quite a while, this discussion. He was drinking wine, so he was getting stupider. And I ended up trying to explain it to him in terms of breakfast. I was like, look, when we were growing up, we were told there was only two sorts of breakfast. You were either eggs or Weet-Bix. And that was fine because you liked eggs and I liked being Weet-Bix. But there were other people who were like, that doesn't suit me at all. But now someone's picked the lock into the kitchen and we've found all the other ingredients. Like, you know, there's a menu and you can say, you can be who you are. You can say, well, I've known I was waffles since I was 6. Or you can say, oh, I'm absolutely pancakes. Pancakes, as I understand it, means you're open to loving any sort of cake. No matter what package it comes in. And so the argument continued and it turned into one of those slippery slope arguments, like he was literally going, where will it end, where will it end? And it ended up with him going, well, what would you do if your son came home and said he was in love with a fruit bat? And I was like, well, it's unlikely. Like, he doesn't really keep fruit bat hours. Like... Where is he going to meet the fruit bat? like, you know, like, I'm hoping he's going to go to a progressive high school, but I don't know that they'll be admitting fruit bats by then. Like, and I was like, would they meet on Tinder? And then I was like, but how would fruit bats use Tinder? Because they'd have to, because they would be upside down. They'd have to hold onto the branch with one foot, and then they'd have the phone in the other. But would the phone read your leathery wing, or would you... would you have to get a second fruit bat to hold the phone while you swiped with your... And he goes, you're getting off track. And I was like, no, no, I really want to work it out. And and I ended up going, look, if my son came home and told me that he was in love with a fruit bat, the first question I would ask them was, are they a nice fruit bat? Do they treat you well and do they make you happy? And if he said yes, I'd say, great, when is the fruit bat coming for dinner? Actually, I'd probably say, what is the fruit bat's name before that? And he'd go, oh, it's... but you can call him Squeaky McLeatherface. I don't know what bats are called. And then I go, okay, great. Well, then let's get Squeaky around for dinner. And then I'd say, but please let me be the one to tell your father, because we'll probably have nectarines and you know how he is about fruit. I am so pleased with myself. So... and then I said to him, and then once Squeaky decided he was coming for dinner, I would learn a few phrases in fruit bat so that when Squeaky came to our house, I could say in fruit bat, welcome to our house, please don't shit on the car. That's what I would say. The thing that I know is that my husband would not be fazed if my son came home with a fruit bat. I mean, he'd be surprised, but he wouldn't be fazed. Like, because he's just cool with whoever you love. Just love whoever you love. You know, like, as long as everyone's happy, whatever configuration that is, it's fine. Like, it's all good as long as you're all having a good time. And I love that I've married someone so open-minded. But I found his limit. I think everyone has a limit of what they're comfortable with. And I was not expecting to find a limit on his comfort, right? But the other day I was reading the internet and I'd got about two-thirds of the way through. And I found an article about a group of people that I did not know existed. And look, I'm not trying to kink shame here, but I found this so fascinating. So there's a group of men who like to dress up as puppies for sex. And I was like, well, that is not something that has ever occurred to me. And then so I said that to Chris, and he was like, oh, yuck. And I was like, what's wrong with you? And he goes, oh, it's bestiality. I was like, no, it's not. It's just men who like to dress up as puppies for sex, having sex with other men who like to dress up as puppies for sex. And I don't know how I became spokesperson for men who dress up as puppies for sex. They did not ask me, but here we all are. And he just couldn't get his head around it. He couldn't get his head around it. It was like, oh, no, it's just weird. And I was like, it's different. Like, I would describe my sexuality as disappointingly vanilla. But I have no problem with whatever you enjoy. You know? And so I go to him, like, I'll be fine with it. Like, you know, as long as they didn't ask me to get involved. And then I was like, why did I say that? I never say that about my straight friends. I'm never like, oh, Glenn and Fiona have asked us over. I hope they don't ask me to get involved. Actually, there is one couple we did have to say that to, but everyone else, and they took our no as no, which was great. But I was like, we just kept having this argument about men who dress up as puppies for sex. And in the end, I went, I know what you're worried about. You're just scared you have to take them for a walk afterwards. And I'd be fine, because I know how to pat them. What I love about Chris is that he is totally supportive of what I do. Like, he's heard all of these jokes. I tell him when I'm going to be talking about him on stage, and I go, are you comfortable with this? And he goes, is it paying the mortgage? And I go, just about. And he goes, keep going. So, like, he's fine. I only discovered this a couple of weeks ago, but there was one joke that he's very uncomfortable with. There's only one over the whole time that we've been together. And most unfortunately, it's a joke that I did on my Netflix special, which came out this year and went worldwide. And also, I have to tell you what the joke is, because I want to tell you about the feedback it got, and I can't explain the feedback unless you hear the joke. So he's going to love this part of the show when he comes on Friday. So this is a joke. It's one of my favourite jokes. So I got my first ever sext from my husband the other day. It was my first ever sexy text, which would have been amazing, except he's got a new phone, and autocorrect changed lick to kick. So I get a text message from my husband, so beep, beep, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, that is conjuring up quite a violent image. I didn't really know how to respond, so I just texted back, look, I can see what you're getting at, but I'm going to have to report you to the Cats Protection Society. So if you can't work out what the text said, I think this group has worked it out down the front. So what the text actually said was, come home quick so I can kick your pussy. That's what the text said, right? Which just gave me this mental image of our cat sitting in the passenger seat going, don't go home, just drive, drive. So there were two things wrong with that test. The first one was the autocorrect, but the second one was he used the word pussy, and I do not find the word pussy sexy in any way. Like, just, I do not like it. Like, for me, for some reason, when I hear the word pussy, it just conjures up like a, something like a squeaky rubber dog toy. Like, you know, pussy, pussy! Like, it just makes me think, you know, like a little rubber roast chicken, like, pussy! Or maybe like a string of rubber sausage, like, pussy, 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 pussy! Or just like a little rubber chop with a face, like, pussy! I've ruined that word for you now. I mean, it's hard to know what to call it, isn't it? My husband doesn't like the word vagina because he thinks it sounds too formal. He reckons it's like the name you'd call it if it was in trouble. Like, vagina, go to your room. Take your sister vulva with you. And he doesn't like the word that I like. I like this old high school word that we used to use. I quite like the word growler. I like growl because it sounds sort of cute and small and busy, like it's, oh, someone give me a biscuit. Like, it sounds like it's having a good time. Like, keeps going up to people and sticking its nose in their crotch. You know, it's like, ah. I had a guy in the audience one time yell out, I call it the love tunnel. And I was like, oh, I don't like that because it makes it sound like it's too big and it's got graffiti down the side. My favourite answer I've ever had from anyone was a very elderly gentleman who put his hand up and he goes, I've always called it the fascinator. And I was like, that's pretty cute, but confusing around cup day. So, that was the joke that I told on Netflix, and it's been getting feedback that I never could have imagined. What's been happening is I've been getting videos from people. They just send me videos of their living room, and in the background, I'm on a TV doing the pussy, 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 pussy. And in the foreground is just a dog losing its shit. It is the best thing that has ever happened. Like, it's like, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Oh, dogs on video, my favourite kind of dog. Oh, love it. I was telling you at the start of the show how I get flustered easily. I had to go into hospital recently for a minor procedure and I got very flustered. It was a very minor procedure. I just had to get some books taken out. And I went into the hospital. And I always get a bit introspective when I go into hospital because I'm thinking about how everyone's lives are changing in that building. Like, you know, things are going well and badly for people. And it always makes me sort of feel a bit emotional. And so I was a bit introverted. And I walk in and a woman I know is standing right on the other end, the other side of the foyer in front of the lifts. And she just yells out at the top of her voice, Cal! Hi! What are you doing here? And I didn't want to tell her. I think that's a question you don't ask in a hospital. Like, there are too many answers that are sad. You know, I'm going to see my aunt for the last time, or I did have that prolapse, or, you know, just there's too many. And I didn't want to just make something up and go, oh, I'm just here for an internal pelvic ultrasound, which is what I was there for. Now, I don't know if you've ever had an internal pelvic ultrasound, probably not most of the men, but what it's like is, you know when you go through security at the airport and they test you for explosives and they kind of waft that wand through your bag? It's like that. But you're the bag. And so I go upstairs, and you don't have to do it at the airport. You don't have to do it at the airport. But you can. So the doctor that did the examination was lovely. I mean, I'm assuming she was a doctor. She was wearing a white coat. She seemed confident. Like, she could have been a visiting baker. You know, she'd be like, oh, I'm good with tongs. Like, who knows? So anyway, I'm lying on the couch and she's doing the wafting and we're both watching what's happening on a giant screen up on the wall and I'm like, oh geez, ABC Kids has really gone downhill, hasn't it? And at the end of the examination, I'm getting dressed and she's telling me there's nothing to worry about, everything's fine. And then she goes, oh look, I'm so sorry to do this to you, but I really love your work. And I was so flustered, I just went, same. So I'm booked in again for Thursday, which is lovely. You've been a delightful audience tonight. Thank you so much for coming out. Also, if you have kids in your life, please buy them my book. It's called George and the Great Bum Stampede, a very serious documentary. And, you know, I can tell you what the feedback has been for it. My 8-year-old neighbour came over the other day and said, Cal, I bought your book. I went, yep. And he goes, it was $8. Not much of a rip-off. I was like, thanks, Ethan. I'll get that on the cover of the next book. You've been amazing and a delight. I've been Cal Wilson. I'll see you all later. Good night.
You've been listening to me, Cal Wilson. I did appreciate it. Thanks to my family for providing material. The producer was Tamar Cranswick. She's great. The executive producer for the ABC was Tom Wright. He's lovely. You can find me on Twitter at Calbo, Instagram at Calbo Wilson, and you can force your children to read my kids' books, George and the Great Bum Stampede and George and the Great Brain Swappery.
Hey, you seem like the kind of person who likes funny and good podcasts. I like your taste. I'm Jan Fran, and I'm here to recommend another show I think you'll love. Mine. The Pineapple Project is the show that tracks down experts and steals their life's work for our own game. And this season is all about the C word, connection.
Other people are scary. Why would you make friends with other people on your street?
It's just so helpful. It blew me away.
Okay, we're having that dinner again. So here's my chance.
If you sometimes feel like there's got to be more to life, right? Where do I find it? Start here with me, Jan Fran, and the Pineapple Project. Find it in the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.